Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. We got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about satellite to cellular communications, but I have a funny suspicion that we're going to be talking about wireless and building wireless and how people conduct business in and outside of buildings. So if you think about what it takes to do this Internet of thing, or the Internet, or building automation, or smart buildings, is the first and most fundamental part of this story is what we call the communication layer. In other words, before you want to connect a device or jump onto a website, you need that communications layer. And in the early days, the only way that communication layer was established was with a wire. And then lo and behold, Wi-Fi and 802.11 and actually Home RF was an old protocol. And today we have things like CBRS, all trying to keep this mobile person connected to the internet at all times. And interestingly enough, you know, running around in your car or outside, not too much of an issue. Inside buildings, sometimes a little bit more difficult. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about a new concept, satellite. Maybe it's not new. Satellite directly to cell phone, and what that would mean. I know many cell phones now can communicate with satellites for SOS, but we're talking about voice, and we're talking about data. We're talking about the implications inside and outside buildings. So we called on one of our old friends, he's not old, but he's been a friend for a while, Rich Berliner, CEO of Digital Locations, who is Mr. Wireless. He knows so much about this topic. So why don't we bring Rich on and get this conversation started? And you're in for a treat because this guy knows a lot about this topic. Rich, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Jim, and appreciate very much you having me on the show.
I didn't mean to call you old. You're not old.
No. I've been around a long time, though. I have to tell you, I got to take that with me, and I was there at the dawn of cellular, so that's how far back I go.
Well, I had the brick. I had the brick in my car, with the big box in the trunk, and I was
one
on the
floor. We have to compare. I have a cell phone museum of cell phones from back in the day, including BlackBerries and God knows what, but the brick was sort of the beginnings of it. As well, I was going to say on the show today, I ran into Marty Cooper, who is considered the father of cell phones, at an event about 3 months ago. Marty is like in his 90s, and he's still all there and a fascinating guy. He was working at Motorola and invented the cell phone. So wherever you are today, Marty.
We can't forget those people that, you know, that got us. We take it so for granted. Oh, yeah, my cell phone, you know, it's not working. I only got four bars. We forget how much time, energy, and intellect has gone into this freedom of being able to run around anywhere in the world and be on a cell phone. Yeah. My brick story was I was on the 405 freeway Friday afternoon, leaving Los Angeles, heading towards Newport. And it was 12 lanes of traffic, six on each side. And it was easily a 3 hour drive. And I said, this is such a waste of time. So I got home and I calculated all the hours I'm spending in my car. And I convinced my boss to buy me the first ever brick cell phone, right? It was like $1,800 a month. It was some ridiculous. And he goes, Jim, how can you justify this? I said, well, I could be on calls, making sales calls and doing business instead of, you know, listening to the radio and being aggravated. And so I bought that, put the brick in. And then my other favorite story is I was so bored one day coming home on that same drive that I was playing music in the keypad. Because I don't know if you remember it, but it made noises when you hit the keypad.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've come a pretty long way. So our primary conversation today, at least step one, is going to be on this new, what do you call the Santana?
Santana. Yes, not Carlos Santana.
Not Carly. I did that earlier.
Antenna,
meaning satellite, right?
Antenna, right.
Santana. Okay, so the concept is basically, a satellite up in the sky communicates directly with your phone. But before we get into that, give everybody just a little bit of your background so they know where you come from and why you're such a domain expert on this topic.
And satellite is a natural progression from what I've done for most of my adult life. Again, I started out in New York in the cell phone business around 1985. This was literally the dawn of the era. And there were no rules. There was no network. There was nothing at that point in time. And I was out selling cell phones. We used to drive into, you know, the early stages after they did put up a few towers. We used to drive into traffic jams and say, hey, late for your meeting, make a phone call here. So, but my background was, I started in selling cell phones at the very early stages and did that for a number of years. And it was very lucrative at that early stage. And then after a while, I got into the building out of the network. And I found that to be very satisfying and very, you know, there was a real satisfaction to knowing that I had built out and made sure that everybody's cell phones worked. Now, this was, you know, at the dawn of the era. So you could make a phone call, maybe you get, you know, this was the era of Can You Hear Me Now? The reason Can You Hear Me Now was out there because the tower was 250 feet in the air and it could broadcast to you at 50 megawatts, and you were talking back to it at 0.6 of a watt. So therefore, you could hear them, they couldn't hear you back. So that's how Can You Hear Me Now got it into the vernacular. And then what we did was we built out literally from the starting point of 13 sites in the entire New York, New Jersey area. From 13 sites, we built a network. And so I did that for a number of years, building the networks. And my company became public. We sold it to another firm and actually merged. We were public. We merged in with another firm. I left after a number of years and did a couple of things in the interim building out networks. But you'll remember, and many of the people maybe listening in today will remember, that about 6 or 7 years ago, I started a digital media company.
That's where we met. Yeah.
Connected Real Estate for a number of years. We sold that in about 2 years ago to the wireless WIA, the Wireless Industry Association. And so a number of about 2 or 3 years ago, I hooked up with some folks that were looking to do something in the satellite industry, and that's Digital Locations. And now I'm CEO of Digital Locations. And what we're doing is we are working on research to allow direct satellite to your smartphone at high speed data rates, not just cell phone calls and not just, you know, short messages, but you know, the benchmark we use is giving you the ability to have a Netflix movie from the satellite.
So let's be clear, on today's, you know, modern cell phones, there is satellite connectivity, I believe, for the SOS app, right?
In a few phones, very few phones.
Very few phones. Okay, but they're at least starting. So after that, so we'll call that a text message, if you will, very little data. Next application, of course, is voice, but now you're going all the way to Netflix, meaning you could have very good internet connectivity anywhere from your cell phone, okay, which kind of puts a little pressure on some earlier concepts like Wi-Fi and even 5G/CBRS, you know, private networks. So give us a little deeper technical understanding of how this next generation of satellite technology might work.
Sure. And again, I just have to plead insanity that I'm not a technical guy by training, but the thrust of it is this, is that there, in order to make any cell phone call work or any application using high-speed data, you have to close the link. You have to have what's called a link budget in order to make that link close, which is the connection, if you will. So we are working on a number of things in order to be able to do to close that link from a satellite to a smartphone. And the interesting part of it is that there is still technology that we have to, quote unquote, develop, invent, whatever, in order to make that happen. There are laws of physics that are, can't be broken, but certainly can be bent and can be worked through to make that happen.
So do we need a new radio for a cell phone that is this advanced satellite connectivity?
Yeah. And so our part of this with Satenna is we're working on the device only side. So we're not modifying anything going on with the satellite. We're simply working on the technology that it takes at your smartphone in order to make this work and close the link. And so that's the development phase. So we've been very, very blessed to have worked with, and I did talk to a number of universities, and we chose to work with FIU in Miami, which has a really interesting program going on. We've got some teaching leads. We've got some students and we've got PhD candidates working on this problem at FIU. I'm down there every 3 or 4 weeks working with them in the lab, and they've got a very sophisticated high-end lab for testing and developing these things. And so it's really a very, very interesting and a natural progression for my career, from starting out at the, you know, the dawn of the cell phone era, working now to what is ultimately the, you know, the new frontier. The last frontier is space-based communications.
Exactly. Well, and at some point, does a company like Qualcomm get involved in your research path?
Not from our standpoint, but there are, you know, developments and things we'll work with other manufacturers in the future. But Qualcomm isn't someone that's on our radar at this point.
So you're looking more for people with satellite.
Viasat. Well, those are the operators. And right. What we are doing is working on, you know, we're sort of an interesting pure play technology company on this. We're not an operator. We're not a Starlink. We're not a Viasat or an Omnispace or any of those folks. We're not an operator.
Got it.
And so, you know, we're a pure play on the technology development side. And so I got to tell you, I went to this week, literally before, you know, you and I began chatting on Wednesday. This week, I was at a satellite show. There were 15,000 attendees at this. And it is, I have to tell you, it is really an interesting thing in this day and age, and a little bit scary to see soldiers walking around, guys in uniform, that says Space Command and Space Force on their uniforms. And so it is, you know, very, very much in the government's view at this point in time that space is the, you know, ultimate situation for defending our country and doing a lot of things that are very necessary.
Well, I mean, not to go down that path too deep, but if you think about our command of those satellites and that frontier with things like GPS and everything for the last, 40 years-ish, and there's challenges coming our way from places like China that are, you know, attempting to put up their own networks and reestablish world standards. And it is a battle.
And you know, becoming and being in the space business now, the satellite business, you know, I've attended, you know a little bit about me. I've done, you know, a lot of trade shows, and I've always felt that trade shows and conferences and meeting people and being out there was very important. But, you know, I went to a conference in Denver a number of months ago, 3 months ago, where I saw this gentleman, Marty Cooper, was at another event. But when you go to conferences and one of the generals got up, who's, you know, I guess the head of Space Command or somewhere involved in the government in the space business, and said, you know, make no mistake, the next war will be a space war. And that is a really, really, you know, kind of chilling comment.
We should probably do a separate podcast on this, but a little final thought. 7-8 years ago, China took one of their own satellites about the size of a refrigerator. They took it out of space with a laser. And if that is the final frontier, then we better be cognizant of what kind of laser guns could be shot from the ground to take.
We better. Power. And, you know, think about this. One of the things that I've done podcast for digital locations and what we're doing is, now that they blasted that satellite, now there's 100,000 pieces of garbage floating around up there that could hit you at 17,000 miles an hour. So, you know, one of the topics that we've explored is space junk and, you know, all the things that go along with, you know, Elon Musk putting up, you know, what could be ultimately 40,000 satellites. He's up to 5,500 and change right now.
Wow.
But
a rocket just went up last week.
Yeah. Those things getting hit by bits and pieces of space junk. It's not a good thing.
And let's try to bring it to a point where our listeners who are interested in people walking in and out of buildings, what this means, just imagine a downward cone from a cell tower would have a certain, you know, trajectory. If you put that trajectory up in the sky, the space that you can cover is much greater, meaning a lot less towers, correct? Right.
Well, but there are challenges with that. Then again, we're talking about closing the link. You're talking about the amount of power. You're talking about a whole series of laws of physics that we're exploring. And that's why this research is so interesting and so necessary, is because there are considerations that are sort of different from a terrestrial-based network, but not impossible. But, you know, we always, as a company, seek out the hard problems, because if they're easy, you know, anybody can go and solve these things. But the hard problems are the ones that take time and money and effort in order to put these things into play. And that's what we're doing with Satenna. So when again, modifying the cell phone only side.
When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about other wireless technologies in addition to this satellite concept. But before we shift that to that conversation, do the building owner operators need to pay attention to this technology at all in the next couple of years, or is this out there a little further?
I think it's sort of a future technology for them. How it all plays for in building wireless and for landlords is still a yet to be decided kind of situation. But it's certainly for the CTOs and for the technology people to keep their eye on, because it has a lot to do with 6G. And what's coming in the future as we develop what we call everything to everything technology in the future.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a break here from one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to get a little bit more into some of the other wireless technologies and concepts that Rich is so familiar with. We'll be right back. So that was a very appropriate commercial, Halo, one of our good friends, and very appropriate because our conference this year is going to be in Tampa, right on the Tampa waterfront. And Halo was involved in an extraordinary project that goes all the way from the Tampa Water Street development all the way through the hotels on the waterfront, just about to the convention center. So we've got an incredible case study we're going to be talking about, at the conference, where they looked at it at a district level, not just a building level. So that's pretty fun. So the bottom line is we want connectivity all the time, when you're in your car, when you're on the sidewalk, and when you're in the building. Give us a little background of your experience with the Wi-Fi, 5G, 4G, 5G, CBRS. Are we ever going to get good bandwidth from these cellular technologies inside of a building?
You know, Jim, that's a great question. And I know that's something that you and I have had, you know, conversations with, because it's really fundamental to what you do and what we were doing in the past. But in this situation, the answer to that is really there are many flavors for landlords to choose from in this day and age. And it really just depends on what kind of investment they want to make and what kind of a time frame they have for real coverage of those buildings. It's now mandatory pretty much that they have to have good in-building public safety coverage. But beyond that, the novelty of making sure that everybody's got coverage, somebody on a floor has a medical emergency, somebody has a customer that needs to reach them right away. It's fundamental.
But Rich, the reality is, and you and I have both been in very high profile Class A office buildings, going up 10, 15, 20 floors, where you virtually are leaning against the glass windows, desperately trying to get a cell signal, still in 2024.
Agreed. And it's a matter of looking at what the technologies that exist are, what's available to you, how much you want to spend. Are you building that building and your walls are open and you could put everything in right now and come out of that construction phase with a fully covered building? It's there. It can be done, Jim.
But what about a Class B office owner, right? Maybe a little old, a little ragged around the edges, but still very functional for, you know, people to work in. Brick, steel, a lot of heavy materials. Maybe not the biggest budgets. What does that middle market do to get cell or wireless coverage inside those buildings?
Well, you know, I think it looks at a hybrid solution. I think you can use, for the building, for, letting people in, for their passes, for the the elevators and things you can use Wi-Fi technology for those in the building that want to use Wi-Fi calling. That's an available technology. It's not optimal, but it's there. But then having cellular booster coverage in the form of a DAS, it's there. Having CBRS or a private network that the carrier cuts off a little frequency and allows you to use, it's there. Just depends on how much money you want to spend. How does your CTO fit in with this? How does your CIO feel about how can it be hacked? All of those things go into it, Jim. But none of these are technologies that have to be invented in order for that landlord to cover that building. It just means that they have to pick a point in time, pick an amount of money they can afford to spend, or find the best deal that they can where there are opportunities where it costs you nothing, but it gets fit into the CAM charge or it gets paid out on a monthly basis. So we have clients.
I believe we're in a wireless transition right now. Okay. Every technology, we went from online services like CompuServe and AOL to the internet, right? That was a big shift. We went from people being sitting at their desk, you know, with computers to being able to go out with cell phones, right? And those are all big shifts. I kind of get a feeling that we're in that phase with the wireless world right now, you know, maybe 2-3 years into a 7 to 10 year shift. But if you had a 20-story Class B office building in a major metro area and you wanted to get cell coverage to every single one of those 20 floors, do you go DAS or do you go CBRS?
That's a good question. And the answer is, do you prefer strawberries or cantaloupe? The bottom line is you have choices. But the thing is that there's so many companies out there that are desperate to get this kind of work from landlords. And they're out there and they're banging on doors. And it's a very difficult situation for landlords to discern what is this they're selling? What do I need? How does this work? Are they real? Is this a good technology?
Well, and especially with younger generation tethered to their phones, right? I mean, they don't even know what a landline is anymore.
Right.
Do you think there's landlords out there losing tenants because of this telecommunications issue and they're not even aware why they're losing their tenants?
I think that that's true. But I don't think that the opportunity, if someone says, hey, I'd rent in this building if there was better cell phone coverage, I think everybody knows that they could go and make that happen if they're willing to put out the capital that it takes, or at least willing to evaluate, the people that are knocking on their door, the folks that we have worked with in the past, you and I. There's lots and lots of folks out there with lots of different strategies.
And I think, you know, for me, this has been a little bit of a frustrating journey because I have been to other places. I got two quick stories. The first one was 2004, I believe it was, Seoul, South Korea. 5 stories down on a train under the ground going 80 miles an hour, 6 bars, parking garages, 5 stories underground, 6 bars. And I'm exaggerating. There is no 6 bars. But and this was 20 years ago. I mean, fast train underground still had coverage. Right. And then my other story.
Let me just add one thing to that before you go on. You're exactly right about the in-building part of it. But think about how many places where there isn't outdoor coverage. And that's why we're focused on Satenna and doing what we need to do to make sure there's coverage outdoors. If you, after 37 or 38 years of building networks, there's still so many places in this country without cell phone coverage.
But you got to help me understand this. 15 years ago, I'm in India, Mumbai, and I land, never been to India. And I'm in one of those 3-wheeled taxis that are, scouting, they're skirting in and out of the cars and up on the sidewalk. Right. It was a Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of experience. It was wonderful. And I pick up my phone and I look and I got 5 bars. I go, this is impossible, right? So just as a joke, I dialed my home number and my wife picks up and I said, I have no idea how this is working. This works better in India. My phone is working better in India than it does in San Diego. Right. Can you explain why that was the case?
Very simple. Desire. There, the equipment exists, the technology exists, and you can do that. And you could do that even 10 or 15 years ago. What happened was, if you think about it, the fact that there were 50, 75 carriers around the country that consolidated into 3 or 4 in this country, and how in other countries, the government said, okay, you and you got a system, go build it and make it the best it can be in these places. As they went to more rural places and focused more dense coverage, these things got better and better. But
well, here's my final word on this topic, then I'm going to ask you yours. The message is we are not as technology advanced or innovative in this country as compared to the rest of the world as everybody might think. And anybody who cares about this needs to just keep yelling and screaming that we need to get hold of our innovative juices again and figure out why we are falling behind the rest of the world when we're supposedly the number one most innovative company in our country in the world.
Final thought. As we look at our mission at Digital Locations to cover the places that people haven't gone and covered because of cost or there isn't electricity there or a whole host of reasons, or it's not economical for some cell phone company to go build in rural Montana, we see our mission as making sure those places outdoor and hopefully someday indoor will be covered. And you couldn't have said it better, Jim. It's about that challenge of making it available to everyone on earth.
Thank goodness for innovators like you who keep pushing, because that's what's going to keep this country, in a number one pole position. But I would really invite anybody, whoever listens to this, to take the time and expense to go to Seoul, South Korea, Singapore, Dubai, and I would throw in Shanghai and India for good measure. When you go experience these next generation technologies and they are so ubiquitous, and then you come back to this country and you say, I wonder why, my cell phone's not working or the 5G network isn't upgraded. And I think there's a bigger message there.
That's true. And again, think about this from the questions you asked me. For landlords, the people that are your constituents, this stuff exists. If you want it, go get it, because there are lots of great companies out there.
That's the parting shot. It's out there. You just got to go get it.
You got to go get it. And we're working on as much as we can the new technology to give you coverage everywhere on earth that we can find.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about this topic. I love talking to people who know what they're doing. And it's a little frustrating to know we have the answers and yet people still don't take the action. But thank you for all your hard work and your passion on this topic. It is greatly appreciated by me and our community. And good luck. And please, when you get that first satellite phone, call me. I'm an early adopter.
Thanks for having me. And if anybody wants more information on what we're doing, digitallocations.com. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Awesome. You have a great day, great weekend.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right. With that, let's get to the news. We've got some really interesting stories going on this week, and Howard is here to sometimes I just feel like, we're just complaining and saying the same old stuff, but Rich is right. It's out there. You just got to go do it.
Yeah, no, he was. That was a great talk. It's good to remind ourselves of what's going on out there and who's pushing the envelope.
Yeah, I still, after all years doing this, we talk a lot about all these technologies and innovations, but I wonder, why is the complacency? What's holding us back from, a medium-sized building owner, making an investment in a DAS or taking a risk on a CBRS network and trying to figure it out? I mean, we know some of the big folks in our community are trying stuff, but it doesn't feel like there's enough experimentation going on or people saying, look, I got to do something. People inside my building need to use their cell phones.
I think if more people complain about it, we'll probably see more action.
Yeah, but it is 2024, Howard. We have been having the conversation for 20 years.
Oh, leave me alone.
Let me get out of here and you can get to the news.
Thanks, Jim. And thank you, Rich. It was really great having you today. There was some great insights on a topic, as Jim said, is near and dear to our hearts. So moving on to the news, I'm going to highlight a few stories from our weekly briefing that goes out every Thursday morning. So first one, Apple's under legal fire again. As Rich mentioned, the Justice Department, backed by 16 state attorney generals, filed a lawsuit against Apple alleging antitrust violations. And they're taking them to task for what they claim are monopoly tactics, primarily concerning the iPhone. So they argue that Apple's not playing fair, that it's bullying its competition with restrictive policies and high fees, leading to poorer services for users and fewer choices. So what does this mean to us? Well, it's all about control over the smartphones. And the lawsuit suggests Apple's making it tough for rival apps and services to get a foothold, which might mean we miss out on potentially better or cheaper options. Apple, on the other hand, insists it's all about innovation and user experience, and they're ready to fight these claims in court. The legal battles could be a game changer, and we're going to be keeping an eye on this. Next, from this week's technology partner, Cardin, comes an article entitled Navigating the Evolving Terrain of Commercial Real Estate with Strategic Analytics and Reporting. Whew. From Vince Rohr, VP Development and Technology. So COVID and the tectonic shift to hybrid work environments fundamentally changed the game. Property managers and owners now need more than just a prime location to succeed. They're focusing on creating reimagined workspaces with the right amenities and flexible design for tenants who want less space but more perks. And the challenges don't stop just there. Economic uncertainties have made analyzing various what-if scenarios necessary for better financial planning. So spreadsheets are out, comprehensive data-driven tools are in, enabling more nuanced management of investments and portfolios. So Cardin stepped in with a suite of portfolio reporting tools to give real estate owners and operators an edge. Focused on areas like strategic lease management and financial insights, they've included some new reporting features like detailed lease expiration reports and multi-year overviews. So Cardin continues to help clients with a clearer picture of long-term financial health and data to make proactive strategy adjustments. So thank you, Cardin. Next, Marked Safe from Cyber Threats. So the FCC launches new IoT labeling program. So the FCC just announced they'll be rolling out a shiny new cybersecurity labeling program for Internet of Things IoT gadgets like smart thermostat sensors, even fitness watches. With cyber threats lurking around every digital corner, this label, dubbed the Cyber Trust Mark, is FCC's way of giving a thumbs up to products that meet top-notch cybersecurity standards. So next time you're out shopping for an air quality sensor or another cool gadget, keep an eye out for this label. It's your clue that the product takes its cyber shield seriously. It should also be a nudge to IoT device designers, manufacturers, and integrators to keep security front and center from the get-go. But that's not all. The FCC is also peeking into devices' backgrounds, making sure they're not secretly chummy with high-risk countries. And if they pass the test, they get to sport the label. If not, no dice. It's voluntary for now, but this could be the new normal, especially starting with consumer tech. And then finally, on the darker side, it's no secret, our water systems are facing cyber threats. The Biden administration sounding the alarm for states to check the locks on their cyber doors, especially at water utilities. Why? Well, it turns out some hackers, especially those with ties to China and Iran, have been taking a crack at them. And the White House and EPA sounded the alarm to all U.S. governors, basically saying, let's get our act together before something bad happens. Environmental health and Homeland Security working together on how to best quickly shield our water from these cyber threats. Even the EPA's putting together a cyber SWAT team for water. And in many cases, as you all know, just simple cyber hygiene, like changing the passwords on control systems and updating software, could possibly be the difference between safe drinking and a full-blown water crisis. So I reiterate, we all need to get our cyber acts together and lock our systems and these water systems and all other critical infrastructure down before trouble hits. So those are just a few of this week's highlighted articles, and I wish you all a great weekend. Back to you, Jim.
All right. So I don't know which article, all of these hit the bullseye on the dartboard. I have mixed emotions about the Apple antitrust. Nobody hates monopolies more than me. But when you look at global competition, you know, hindering Apple's ability to compete globally, I mean, I kind of think I like letting them go and be as powerful as they are because it's
I agree.
Yeah.
They're doing a great job. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look on the other side, Huawei in China, from cell phone to tower, you know, complete control of the ecosystem. I mean, that's a little bit of a competitive advantage. So it'd be interesting to see how this one falls out. The other one that caught my attention was actually two of them was the OT. Thank goodness that we're starting to get somebody paying attention to the danger in OT devices.
Surprised to hear that one.
Yeah. And it'll probably roll out a little clunky, but at least they're heading in the right direction. And then that last one, the water, the grid and water systems are our two Achilles heel. And if we don't secure those, that there's a problem. So
we've known it for a long time. I'm waiting for a read that we've actively mobilized forces in a very focused way.
There's a pretty good chance cybersecurity is going to make the general session stages here. And it did a little bit last year, but it's becoming something that nobody can avoid anymore, although a lot of people still are. But I think we're going to continue to elevate it, especially with the AI overlaying the cyber and everything that it can enhance it. It's getting pretty darn sophisticated and pretty scary. So we just want to arm everybody with the right information.
We are in a cyber warfare, warfare right now. And I don't think we can flog this topic too much. No. We keep driving it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. You have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, everybody.
Be well. All right. Before we wrap, let's hear from our final sponsor, and I'll be right back. All right. So thanks to everybody for today's podcast. Thanks to Rich, the in-building wireless conversation, satellite in-building, wireless in general, a huge topic. Rich, certainly an expert there. Thanks to our sponsors. And of course, thanks to the RealCom team behind the scenes. Next week, we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we are going to go to the immersive experience inside office. Howard mentioned one of the articles was talking about what is it going to take to get people back into offices to do that hour commute. Well, it's got to be a better experience than it is at home. Just like back in the 70s and 80s, you went in the office because that's where the conference room was, that's where your file cabinets were, and that's where that $100,000 photocopier was. And so now what we are seeing is we need new ways to collaborate, more immersive, more experiential. And I think you're really going to like our guests. We're going to have a couple senior level executives from ART, and they're going to be talking about holoportation, bringing people in three-dimensionally into offices to create a new kind of experience. And we have a little experience with this. We teleported somebody at RealCom in 2001 from London, England, into our exhibit hall, hall in Dallas, Texas. We teleported somebody three-dimensionally, and it blew everybody away. And I think this might be a little sneak peek of what you're going to see at the conference this year. So next week, don't miss it. Holoportation, three-dimensional immersive experiences. Looking forward to that conversation. You all have a great day. Be well, and we will see you next week on RealCom Live.